On this episode of The Flop House, we discuss Fireproof, starring Kirk Cameron, America's number one religious star, if you don't count Mel Gibson. Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
There are no ladies here.
Welcome to the Flop House.
Oh, you meant the listeners.
Hey, what's up?
The podcast where we watch a bad movie and then chat about it a little bit.
You said it.
I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
I'm Elliot Kalin. What do you know?
Not much. Oh, it was a rhetorical question.
Yes, that was what we like to call rhetorical.
Sure.
So, it's been a while.
Yeah.
Are we going to tell the story of last week's failed attempt?
No, let's just pretend like it never happened.
Okay.
It keeps the mystique up.
Can we at least just give a quick summary that so people don't watch that movie, right?
Yeah, all right, fine. Stuart.
Don't watch Babylon AD.
Starring Vin Diesel.
Yeah, starring Vin Diesel. Somehow it was so bad that it managed to fuck up our recording that we recorded.
The computer refused to accept a sound file of us talking about it.
I think because Dan titled it Babylon AD, and the computer just howled it out.
It wasn't just religious observance that kept us from putting out an episode last week.
No,
we
that
actually
helped.
Recorded an episode, Babylon AD, and it disappeared. And so in an effort to placate the gods.
Speaking of religious observance.
Yeah, this week we watched Fireproof.
Yeah. I mean, hot on the heels of me spending an entire Sunday watching Easter-themed porn.
Fireproof, hot on
whoa,
the
whoa.
Heels.
Easter-themed porn, how so?
You know, like Easter bunnies.
Oh, it wasn't like Jesus.
Furries porn.
Jesus is resurrected and he's got morning wood.
Well,
and he has
I wouldn't say
to,
it was
please.
Furry porn. It was pretty traditional, except, you know, at some point somebody had a Easter bunny costume on.
You know, when we were deciding on this film, we were deciding to do Fireproof. Elliot was like, I don't know if I want to do it. I don't want to get caught in that trap of saying things about religion or whatever. And now he's making morning wood Jesus.
Not
jokes.
Saying things about religion. I didn't want to get caught in the trap of, oh, Kirk Cameron's crazy because he's really religious. Let's make fun of how devout he is, because there's something admirable about someone who's very devoted to their faith. This is a terrible movie, that is true.
That's what
but
we
I didn't want
make
it to
clear.
Be. It's terrible because it's poorly made, not terrible because it has a Christian message.
Yes, before the listeners out there, the religious listeners out there, turn off their iPods and then throw them in the sewers.
With it. Yep.
We just don't
like back Satan or
with
something?
The rest of the trash.
That we're not making fun
this,
of.
This podcast deserves to be with the trash in the sewers.
Yep, yeah. They're like, why did I download this podcast and a bunch of Slayer albums?
Yeah, we don't have.
Well,
anything.
Faith House has no new episodes this week. I guess I'll try Flop House.
It's close enough. No, it's not the religion that we object to. It's the lousy production.
Well, it's a bad movie. It's maybe, how much actual story time do you think is in this movie? Like 15 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
20 minutes? And it's stretched out to about 2 hours?
Yeah. There's a maybe a touching short film in this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why don't you guys spin me a tale, okay? tell me of this Fireproof.
Well, it's the story of a fireman named Caleb and his wife, whose name I don't remember.
That was Caleb.
Okay, Caleb. It's the same name. Caleb.
Really? Man named Caliph.
Doesn't matter. Okay. man named Caliph. He's the head of the Muslim Caliphate. Man named Caleb. He's a heroic firefighter who doesn't treat his wife very well. But it's not like he doesn't abuse her. He's just
he's not abusive.
They're just not nice to each other. And he has it's implied an addiction to internet porn. And he really wants to buy a boat.
Yeah, those two things.
All he talks about is buying
common.
A boat.
Do you think the internet porn he looks at is like boat related?
Maybe
like the love boat.
I think it's
or something. I
it's probably
know.
All like bikini girls. It's not really hardcore porn.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, the Christian movie way of implying internet porn was to have a pop up appear after he had been on a website already for like clearly 7 minutes.
A website
minutes.
About boats.
It didn't even look like a website. It just looked like a JPEG of a boat.
Yeah,
just,
and
just,
I was
just staring at the wallpaper on his monitor.
Yeah, exactly.
Someday I'm gonna have a boat like that.
And like this headshot of a woman pops up with the legend "Wanna see?" beneath it,
and then click here.
And there's some hearts
and
there's
some hearts animated
hearts.
But the woman is not even particularly attractive or porny looking.
Right.
Yeah, it's just like a headshot, like something from a social network.
Well, it's
site.
Like
maybe
the
it's
idea.
Like an amateur website.
That's possible, like wife stuff.
It's an idea of internet porn that
like,
could only
do it with my wife.
Wife.com. Wife stuff sounds like an advice webpage for new wives.
Yeah, exactly.
Where do I buy detergent?
Yep.
Go to wifestuff.com.
No, it's internet porn as viewed through the lens of either a Christian film or say like a 5-year-old. What they might think internet pornography is like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, a pretty like, girl, want to see?
Or like if on like an episode of like Saved by the Bell or the Hannah Montana show, they wanted to show somebody looking at that
yeah.
porn.
Anyway, so he doesn't treat his wife so well.
Sorry,
she's,
Hannah Montana. I was just, don't come kill me or anything.
She's not, she does that. She's not so nice to him. And basically, like, to sell the story as quickly as possible, avoid the parts where they fight like 100 fires in the small town of Albany, Georgia.
Yeah, there's a shitload of fires, right?
Yeah. But basically, they're unhappy in their marriage. She is tempted by a doctor at work who's very charming, and by charming I mean like presentable. And
not gross.
He
wears a tie.
Yes. And Kirk Cameron's father, Kirk Cameron playing Caleb, gives him a diary, which is, what is he called, a love diary? Or
The Love Dare.
The Love Dare. Mm-hmm. Dr.
Love Dare.
Dr. Love Dare.
Mike Myers.
The Love Darer.
The Love Dairy.
And he said, Love Dare. All these cows are just giving us love. No milk. He gives him a 40-day...
That sounds like a lactating movie.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
That sounds like pornography.
Yeah. He gives him a manual for a 40-day program where you
just
like...
Wait, a manual?
He gives him a copy of A Manual in Space.
Okay. I didn't know they had a space one.
Yeah, well, it's a series. But he gives him this manual, like this handwritten love manual. It's a 40-day program for... basically showing your wife that you care. And then about halfway through, it becomes about accepting the love of Christ as an example for the love to show your wife.
Yeah, the classic marriage counseling bait and switch.
Pretty much, yeah. And then Kirk Cameron does it. His wife learns that he's not a bad guy. Maybe the doctor she cares about is not as great as she thought he was. And they make up.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a 2-hour long. I cut out the comic relief about the other firemen,
yeah,
one of whom is overweight.
Like 40 minutes into the movie, there's that climax where he and his dad like have this like touching moment where he finally realizes that he needs to, you know, give all his faith to God and everything. But then afterwards, like, there's no real conflict. Like, you're pretty sure she's gonna get with him.
They
right?
could have cut to the last scene at that point.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And also they and like I said, they fight like 8 fires.
And we'd like to point out, this is 1 hour and 58 minutes, I believe, was the runtime.
Absolutely.
To tell a kitchen sink story about a marriage in trouble, sort of trouble. Then the husband decides to treat his wife nice for a change, and then things turn out
right. There are maybe, let's say, 7 characters in the movie, and 4 of them are necessary for the plot. There are like 3 locations, not counting the fires. It's, you know, there's not a lot going on.
Well, I am counting the fires.
Wait, is fire a location?
Yes, it is both a location and a character. It seems like there's a subplot in this movie that is not just explored at all, which is this arsonist that's running around this small town lighting fires. Because they answer, I mean, I'm exaggerating with 8, but they answer at least 4 fires in the course of the film.
Yeah.
And this, you know, you're led to believe that this spans like a month. Yeah, it's like a 30-day program.
What I was disappointed by was...
It's a 40-day program.
The first actual call that the firefighters respond to, we get a little bit of like a lead into it by seeing the like, you know, the southern teens getting in like a car race or something. And then, you know, them being wrecked on the train tracks.
Really? That was supposed to be connected because it seemed like completely unconnected.
I thought those were going to be characters that came up later, but...
Yeah, you thought those were characters from them when they were kids or something?
No. I thought maybe those kids would play parts.
Because if they had been a flashback, they would have said flashback.
I guess so.
Or like...
Well,
this
is also
earlier.
A movie... During the opening credits, you just hear a mother telling her daughter... Someday you'll find a guy who loves you as much as your dad loves you, and that'll be true love. And then it cuts to the firehouse, and this is like Bratz, just the legend, present day, comes up on screen, mm-hmm. which makes you think like, wait a minute, are they going to go back in time? Like, are we going to jump ahead to the year 2527?
No.
Like, present day.
That framing device is never referenced again.
I don't even know who's talking to who.
Yeah.
Well, the whole opening was... you know, was the setup like the dad that they talk about in that opening is God, of course, right?
I guess so. In the, you know, once you've figured it out, but
yeah, I mean, once you unlock the code,
well, it's also sort of creepy. The because, Omega like,
code. That's the subtext of the movie, by which I mean the text.
It's one of these scenes where you hear the little girl being like, "Can I marry Daddy?" He's like, "No, I'm already married to Daddy." He's like, "Okay, can I marry Daddy after you're done with him?" And you're like, "Oh, well, this is supposed to be heartwarming, but it's kind of creepy."
Yeah.
What I'm saying is your time is limited.
And I have a sexual attraction to my father.
Watch your back, Mom.
Mormons? Is that a Mormon? No, that's not Mormons.
No.
You're thinking of Oedipus Rex.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I am thinking about that. So, yeah, there's a lot of, they respond to a lot of fires.
They respond to a lot of fires. There's a lot of joshing at the firehouse.
Yeah, so I would have liked to see a little more lead into the fires, like seeing what happened.
What caused them.
Kind of like a Final Destination thing where, you know, it's like a Rube Goldberg thing where, like, shit falls apart and then catches on fire.
I assumed that every shot would just be a guy wearing a ski mask running away with a thing of motor oil and a, you know, like a butane lighter.
No, I was hoping it'd be more kind of like wacky with more like comic relief, like people accidentally putting things in the microwave and like accidentally getting in, like spraying gasoline on each other and then setting something.
They were having a gas fight and they accidentally.
Yeah, like in that Zoolander movie.
Or even if they were like, "Oh man, this drought is really affecting the town."
Yeah. One word.
All this tinder drought. Is really dry.
Yeah.
Well, then, they would clearly need a four-hour movie to explore all of that.
Well, the story of Albany, Georgia goes back to the 19th century.
There's been more fires here than anywhere else. They say it's on a dormant volcano, but is it dormant after all? Who knows?
Say it's on an ancient Indian fire ground.
or, Stuart, you suggested that it was built on a hellmouth.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like it's over one of those coal fires that burns underground for 1,000 years.
Sure.
This is an exciting movie.
Yeah. Well, it's coming alive before my eyes.
Instead,
comparatively. Well, I mean, the movie we were talking about right now is an exciting movie, Coal Land.
So there's a couple montages.
Uh-huh.
Set to Creed-style rock and roll music.
Yeah. Where it would be like the husband and the wife just not seeing eye to eye, not getting along.
Not eating dinner at the same time.
Or as Elliot pointed out, there was one late in the movie that was just a weird mixture of Kirk Cameron doing good things for his wife and then just training scenes down at the firehouse. You're kind of like, huh, is there a parallel being drawn?
It's supposed to draw some sort of similarity between this, but it really doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it sort of felt like that montage in Roxanne where they're... training at the firehouse.
There is one great running gag in the movie, though, which is that Kirk Cameron gets mad and like throws his garbage can, or he gets mad and hits his garbage can with a baseball bat. And each time he looks over, and his creepy old man neighbor is just staring at him, apparently bewildered at Kirk Cameron's violence. And each time he's like, "What's the guy's name? Is Mr. Griff or something like that?" Like,
yeah, played by Academy Award nominee Richard Jenkins, right?
No, It was not Richard Jenkins. It was a man probably 20 years older than Richard Jenkins.
Okay,
but each time he's like, "Hey, Mr. Griff," and then just like deadpan stare and the old man turning around and walking away. And it was like, I wanted to learn more. And you see his wife later, and I wanted to know more about the marriage between these two withered old people who think their neighbors are crazy.
Yeah. Speaking of marriage, this movie was about it.
There's a ton of stuff about marriage.
And
it's all about marriage.
You're the only one of us who's married, Dan, so you're going to have to give us the inside track.
Yeah, what? So I assume that you went through this at one point and your dad gave you the love dare.
Sure.
Yep, and then found out later on. Can I spoil it?
Yeah, spoil it. Spoil the twist that comes out of nowhere
and affects
nothing. The
best twist is at the very end. Okay, everything's happy. You know, everybody's in love.
And, they've accepted Jesus.
Yeah, and there's this, you know, the scene where Kirk Cameron's walking with his dad. In a scene that's shot very similarly to a women's hygiene commercial. And his dad reveals that the Love Dare diary that he gave his son was actually written by the kid's mom, by the dude's wife. Wait, how can I? I didn't explain that very well.
Kirk Cameron's mom.
Yes,
was the one who wrote
instead of his
diary.
Dad.
But does that mean that she had to go through the love dare, or that she gave the love dare to his father? Either way, it doesn't. I mean, it doesn't change.
It doesn't matter. Either. Basically, it was like a weird twist that nobody cared.
And
about
at the
it.
End, and Kirk Cameron walks into his mother, and they're both crying. And he's like, "I didn't know. Forgive me. Of course, I forgive you. I love you. What?
Yeah, that was. The
I don't
thing.
Know what happened.
No, I think that like the father was the one who was going to leave because he was being mistreated. Like he talked about how he wanted to go.
But then why was
so
he?
Why did Kirk Cameron run in and apologize to his mom rather
really
than be like?
To her.
Mom,
had
you
he
were a
he'd been
you were an abusive
he'd
mother.
Been really short with her, I believe, when he was growing up.
I see.
Okay, well, we
I'm
don't
just
see
making
any
all that.
He was experiencing growing.
You know
pains,
when he was at yeah,
and she was the bad one in this relationship. And at the end, Kirk Cameron goes in and apologizes.
Yep, when he was at Fireman's University,
FU. Yeah.
Yeah, he would get really drunk and he. Complained to all his buddies.
He's
like, "My mom's such a bitch."
he'd steal the keys to the school fire truck and ram it into the house.
Yeah, exactly. While he was on double secret probation, right?
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, "Mom, I'm sorry that you were married to such an emasculated pussy."
Yeah.
Sorry that my dad was such a wussy who wouldn't stand up for himself.
Exactly.
What a dork.
Here's the weird thing. Speaking of standing up for yourself, marriage is couched in the whole time in words like respect or honor. Like Kirk Cameron, his complaint at the beginning
is... Which, don't get us wrong, important qualities.
No, but mutual respect is important, but really...
Stuart's making it. I don't know, face.
I would imagine on a bedrock of, say, love. That whole open is Kirk going, she doesn't give me the respect I deserve. There needs to be respect. And it's such a, like, weird Sopranos-type thing for him to be complaining about.
Well, here's what I wanted to talk
about. And then later
about.
On, it's like, oh, now that we both love Jesus, we can really respect each other.
I agree. I saw a lot of parallels between the movie Fireproof and the television program The Sopranos.
Dan,
the respect
don't forget
issue
about what
being
you
one of
say.
The most one of the most notable. The others being, you know, the
the unhappy of marriage. Also,
there's marriage in both.
All those scenes from Kirk Cameron is like, oh, a little mozzarella, oh, some prosciutto, oh.
Yeah,
you know.
That. All the Italian guys in it, I think. The fireman.
Oh, by the
Italian,
way, there was a
right?
whole subplot where he was the head of a mob family and he has to keep everything under control, yeah.
Yeah. Two, basically the same thing.
What were you going to say, Dan?
I was just going to say that, like, this movie sort of
made you rethink your marriage?
Unless there's a bedrock of the idea that, oh, this marriage is really failing. You know, like, that's what we have to buy up top to go through everything else. We have to buy two things, I feel like. Number one, that there's
toothpaste.
Some sort of spark of
that
love
they loved
between
each other
them.
At some point.
Yeah, exactly.
Which you never get from them.
You don't get that. And number two, that there's a, like, a compelling reason why this marriage is breaking up. Now, all right. I think that it's probably true that divorces probably... largely come from a million small things rather than one big thing.
I mean,
thing.
Speaking from personal experience with my own divorce, no, I was never married. With my parents are divorced, and really it was a matter of years of small things and eventually them drifting apart and just, you know, failed emotional connection. It wasn't like, there was no giant event
right.
that caused a rift.
But in this
just,
case, that the movie dramatizes that as Kirk Cameron really loves thinking about buying a boat.
Hell yeah, he does.
But also, and here are their complaints of each other, aside from the respect.
Yeah.
When Kirk Cameron gets home from work, there's no food on the table, and Kirk Cameron refuses, and his wife says, "You refuse to use the money you're saving for a boat to buy my crippled mother a new wheelchair and hospital bed."
Well, she specifically says, "Things around the house." Which,
and things around the
looking
house,
around
too.
Their house.
It's a nice house.
Yeah, looking nice and pretty clean.
They got granite countertops.
Yeah, like, and she's like,
they got four red plates on the wall.
Four-car garage.
And she makes a comment like, "The back door needs painting." Like, a boat costs more than a fucking painted door, okay?
But then eventually it comes out that her mother had a stroke and needs a new wheelchair and a
so
hospital bed.
It's the things left unsaid is what you're saying.
Exactly, yes. But it seems like this is a couple that has drifted into marriage and is drifting apart, but there's no... You know, there's no reason for them to be married, and there's no
Why
reason for
them
to divorce.
Why do you think they got married originally? Like a pregnancy scare or
I
something?
I think that had to have been it. He got her knocked up, then it turned out it was just hysterical, and then...
Sure.
Or maybe
like
they
it.
Loved each other when they were young, and then they got brainwashed, or got amnesia.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Or
aliens.
Like, or aliens, yeah. Mm-hmm. The thing is, they never
He
refer,
saved her from a fire.
That's
probably
might have been
it.
Yeah. But they never refer to any event in their past. Like, you would think it would be pretty standard for a movie about a married couple that they'd at least acknowledge how they met, things they used to do, like what life used to be like when they were married. Instead, you never hear about it. It's like they live in a vacuum.
Yeah, exactly.
Or like the entire Earth came into existence when the movie started, and they were already married.
Well, yeah, like it's like as Kirk Cameron's character opens his eyes in that first shot, that the entire world. It's like existence. Yeah, it's like the Big Bang.
Maybe Kirk Cameron is God in it, and he's rediscovering his own love.
It's similar to like the god Azathoth, and that all of our existence is but a dream. Yeah. As he lies sleeping somewhere,
or the Theodore Sturgeon book story, The Ultimate Egoist.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just feel like from a dramatic standpoint,
more like Azathoth.
We need more as an audience, like oh,
to hold together a 2-hour film. Yes, we definitely do.
It's like Kirk Cameron gets angry and he goes outside and he throws the plastic trash can against the wall, and that's supposed to indicate that they have a terrible marriage.
That's also, and that's the height of anger. Him throwing the trash can around is a plastic trash can is the height of anger. Like, which I'll do that.
What do you want him to do? Like, set a hobo on fire?
No, but like,
but that's pretty reasonable though. Like, he's like, oh, I'm taking my anger outside. I'm letting it out on something completely inanimate.
But like, if I'm taking out the garbage and I get like water from the garbage on me and it's gross on me,
I've been meaning to talk to you about that, by the way.
Then I'll get mad and hit and throw the garbage can. Like, it takes very little to get to that level of anger where you hit an inanimate object that you can't really hurt.
I've been meaning to talk to you guys about your anger issues.
Look, we just hate trash cans,
It didn't have the cliche scene, though.
When does it end with trash cans? The next step is small animals.
No, I think there's a lot of steps between trash cans and small animals.
It's very, very, very fine line.
At least toaster is in the middle there somewhere.
You have a toaster?
No, I don't have a toaster oven, but... But at least,
okay, fine. You don't have a toaster oven,
and I guess I have to
brag about everything else.
I guess no, I do have a toaster oven. They don't. I guess I have to applaud the film for not including a scene where they have an argument and Kirk Cameron raises his hand at her, and she flinches, and then he realizes what he's done and puts his hand down.
Yeah, he stares at his hand, and he's like, "Oh my god!"
That would be going too far. It is realistic to say there are bad marriages when there isn't necessarily abuse. It's just two people who are not getting along.
Yeah, I neither feel that love, nor do I feel like the deep-seated hate.
No.
Like, it just seems like a couple of people who are kind of cranky with each other, and then the movie jumps to divorce, but, and then the movie jumps to, like
a couple of roommates that are just kind of annoyed.
Yeah, and even when he gives himself up to God, which should be the height of spiritual ecstasy, you would think. Like,
absolutely.
He has learned to love God with all his heart. He can now repent of his sins. He can see how the world is. He can let reality wash over him. Even that is kind of like, this is great. Mm-hmm. These are fine. You know,
like, hey, now I got some friends. I got some friends that are Christian too.
You know what? I believe in God and heaven and hell and the entire cosmology of the church. All right.
It's pretty good. I smile a lot more. Hey, let's get in a hot sauce drinking contest, guys.
Like, no, he does that before he discovers God.
Oh. That was before?
But he does. What's the brand of hot sauce?
It's Wrath of God.
Yeah.
But wait a minute. The guy who drank it and burned his mouth was really prideful. Oh.
Yeah, see?
Oh, it's all falling into place.
There's a
guys.
Lot of lessons in this film. A lot of lessons.
Story structure wise, I sort of felt too like.
It's terrible.
Well, yeah, I mean, all of the significant things sort of happened right in the middle of the movie. Like, as you said, him, like, coming to God. And then also, like, the big fire in the film
is in the middle.
Yeah, it comes in the middle. There's no big climax where, oh, there's a big fire and the wife rushes to his side. It's like, oh, no, he's stuck in the building, but I've realized I love him. Nothing like that.
You know what was great? It was right after that big fire and he's at the hospital and everything. The doctor gives him some advice about, he's like, yeah, you probably shouldn't put your wedding ring back on. You should let your hand have some time to heal because you've been burned. And he's like, I don't think so. I'm going to put this ring back on.
My hand will have to heal around my ring.
It's like, you know.
That sounds horrific.
Yeah, and now it's embedded in the skin.
Yeah, it's like that chunk of moon rock that
John
Jameson.
Jameson
got.
Yeah,
from
turned
the
him into Man-Wolf.
Yeah, and they had to rip it out of his skin. So. Yeah, it was just really weird.
Or like the Darkhawk's mystic amulet.
Yeah, exactly like the Darkhawk's
mystic.
Yeah,
they have to pull out of his chest.
But the thing about it is...
Or like the guy's heart in Temple of Doom.
That's one of my problems.
Or like if you get a splinter.
That too.
It's in no way... It's just an all-purpose religious type thing is when somebody's like, Like, is this person's like, I'm clearly going to disregard the advice of somebody whose profession is healing, okay? I'm gonna disregard this doctor's advice.
Well, it was a doctor who was trying to get his wife to cheat on him.
Yeah, but did he know that at that point?
No, he didn't.
See, that's the thing.
Okay.
I guess we, the audience, should just agree with him.
Well, I mean, people also don't listen to doctors a lot of time. I have a stand-up
bit about
it.
But why would the doctor have him suggest, like, even if he was an evil doctor... Why would he want him not to wear his wedding ring? Does he know that's like the source of his powers?
Maybe,
or something?
Yeah. Okay. He's like Green Lantern.
Okay. I was going to say like John Jameson and and Manwolf.
Yeah, or maybe John Jameson and Manwolf, yeah.
Or Splinto, the Splinter superhero.
Oh, yeah.
Splinto. I have the ability to make splints really fast.
Yeah, what a... Okay, so yeah, so that was my little tangent about ignoring doctor's advice.
Yeah.
Apparently, you don't have to listen to doctors that, when you're on the Love Dare.
Well, you're only supposed to listen to the Love Dare manual.
Oh, okay, not doctors.
His dad is so even-keeled throughout the entire film. Like, I was waiting for the scene where he pops some sort of antidepressant mm-hmm. or mood-altering pill.
Yeah, like, I imagine this guy poops maybe once a week.
Oh, no, once a day, very regular, because he takes care of his system.
Nice. It's a little like owl pellet, like turd. Doesn't smell that bad.
You can pull it apart and find the bones.
Sure.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's like, oh, look what I made.
It's a perfectly spheroid ball, kind of like an old musket bullet.
He just wanders the woods in his cable knit sweater, leading Kirk Cameron to a cross
that he didn't realize.
He didn't realize that's where he was headed, but everyone ends up at the cross.
Yeah, because when they first find that place, isn't Kirk Cameron like... Hey, that must be from that old summer camp they left here.
Well, the
here.
Dad kind of pretends he doesn't know it's there.
He's like, oh, funny we ended up over here, I guess.
Didn't realize this cross was on the grounds of my estate.
Yeah.
Maybe? They never explain where that location is.
Yeah, that's... yeah. Yeah, that's weird.
There's a lot of vagueness about the film.
Mm-hmm. I guess that's fair.
Very generic.
Including in the way it's shot.
Yes. Everything about it, it's like in Repo Man when they would drink beer and it would just be a can that said beer on the side. Or just boxes that said food. That's this movie in a lot of ways.
So you guys have anything you want to say about the shenanigans down at the station house? Or
No, they were stupid.
Yeah, they tried to add some comedy, right?
Yeah.
But it was so jarring. It was like, right? It was like, uh-oh, well, let's take a little trip and see what Horatio Sanz is doing at the firehouse.
Well, and then there's that other...
Not really.
The world's fattest firemen are up to.
They deal with so many fires, and yet all their firemen are so out of shape.
Yeah, I mean, well, they're so busy fighting fires, they don't have time to exercise, I think. But they do have time to eat submarine sandwiches, I would imagine.
They just eat them in the truck on the way to the fire.
The other weird character was the one fireman who gives Kirk Cameron advice exclusively through metaphors.
His Bagger Vance, if you will.
Yeah.
He's an African-American who also has had his marriage problems. He has already accepted Jesus as his Lord and Savior. Uh-huh. And he gives him advice through metaphors like the salt and pepper shakers.
Yeah, gluing salt and pepper shakers together equals a marriage.
I think that was the point.
In some ancient Christian cultures, that's how you symbolized a marriage ceremony.
Yeah, exactly. Then you shatter the salt and pepper shakers. And
the mixing of the salt and the pepper represents
the
new
is,
life.
Yeah. After you're married, you have to have both salt and pepper on everything.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter what it is. Maybe you just want salt. No, pepper's there too.
Yeah.
It's the way it works. That's a compromise. That's a marriage.
Listen, when you're married, you don't get to control how your food is seasoned because your wife cooks it the way she likes it. That's marriage.
The people at Reese's were trying to go for a slightly different metaphor, but Kirk Cameron wasn't having it.
Can't we say that marriage is like a bag of M&Ms?
That's a polyamorous marriage with all the different types of M&Ms.
And that doesn't fit the cosmology.
No, not at all. Well, it was a very well-meaning film, poorly made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we can get on to final judgments.
Okay. Final judgments.
So this is where we decide whether the movie was a good, bad movie, a bad, bad movie, or a movie that we actually liked. So, Stuart, what do you have to say?
Well, I think it's pretty clear the type of things I like in a movie, and this movie didn't have any of
those. What would those be? Like blood, boobs,
you know, like some
kind of
violence,
stuff?
Some boobs, you know, some yucks.
Like a rapping grandma?
Yeah, or a foul mouth rapping grandma.
A werewolf.
At least one fart. A werewolf? Yeah, absolutely.
This movie was particularly fartless.
President that's also a werewolf?
Man.
Don't give away my screenplay ID.
Okay, so obviously
it's called President by Day.
This movie had none of those things. So I'm going to have to say, and it wasn't very enjoyable. It was a bad, bad movie. However, you know, once again, I think it is well-intentioned.
Yeah.
No, it's certainly sweet-natured, but that doesn't change the fact that it's terrible.
So was 10,000 BC, you know?
No, that was not sweet-natured. That was crass and just horrible.
Yeah, what I would say about this movie is...
So was the invasion.
No, again, crass, mercenary.
If this film was an hour long... I would say that it was a good bad movie because it is ineptly made in a way that could often be very funny. However, the fact that it was padded to such an extraordinary length ultimately just made it dull. So I would say that on that level, it's a bad, bad movie.
I'm going to have to agree with you guys. It was.
You're not rocking the boat on this one?
No, I don't think so.
You look like you kind of want to, though.
Well, I know, because I didn't enjoy it, but it's. I guess I would. Okay, I'll say it's a good, bad movie, but not in the way of, like, this is a movie that's hilarious to sit down and make fun of, which it has kind of the reputation of a little bit right now.
Well, yeah, you want to do, like, a drinking game where every time somebody does something stupid. I don't
know. Where whenever somebody. You get really drunk.
I've never actually participated in a drinking game.
But you have to give it credit. I mean, I will give it credit for being a movie that was made, I assume, to be shown in churches to married couples who are having problems.
It was actually a fairly big financial success. I mean, I think it's the most.
Was it in theaters or was it?
Successful religious film, like specifically. Like,
A little thing called The Ten Commandments.
Well, okay. Put out by like a company that specializes in religious films. I'm talking
little thing called I don't know.
Yeah, it was
the Rankin Bass Christmas specials.
Mm-hmm. It was a big enough thing that it definitely charted when it was released. It may have been actually number one for whatever weekend, like whatever
I don't think that happened.
Deep winter weekend. Maybe number
maybe
two.
That was the weekend that all the other movie theaters in the country were closed.
I might just be thinking that it would open in the top five, which is still a big triumph. But it was not unsuccessful.
No. But at the same time, I don't think when they made it, they were setting out to make a number one. They were trying to make a hit film. I think they were trying to make. They had a message they wanted to get across, and they did it in the most gentle, boring way possible.
And if in the process they made a little bit of money. All the better. Fireproof too.
And frankly, Kirk Cameron wins me over with knowing that he believes what he's saying in the movie.
Sure.
Like, as much as I don't believe what he believes, there is, and a lot of people make fun of him about it, like, there is something genuine in his almost maniacal faith in Christianity.
Mm-hmm. So, Fireproof 2, what's the setup?
Okay.
It's a financial success. We need to build on that.
Okay. We thought all their marriage problems were solved. Uh-oh. There's a hotter doctor in town.
Oh, man.
And at the same time, a sexy firehouse inspector from the government comes by, and she's got her eyes set on Caleb.
And she's a boatist.
I'm boatist.
And she owns a boat. She lives on a houseboat.
A boat aficionado.
Holy shit.
At the same time, what's this? The arsonist from Fireproof is back. A rash of fires hits the small town of Albany, Georgia, and only Caleb can put them to rest for good.
Or maybe Caleb's mom and dad have a da-da-da-da-da divorce. Think about it. That would throw his world into turmoil.
Maybe the love dare doesn't work. Does he have to reconsider his relationship with what's-her-name? There's a lot going on in Fireproof.
Or what if, like,
Fireproof 2 proof in it.
Or maybe it's years down the road and the love dare is spread kind of like in The Ring.
Uh-huh.
In like The Ring 2. And somehow all the love dare is creating some kind of weird like gestalt consciousness.
Maybe.
That's going to devour all humans.
Is that what happens in The Ring 2? I never saw it.
I don't remember.
I just remember that a bunch of CGI deer attacked a car.
And I remember when we saw it in the theater, this lady got really mad at another lady for spilling nachos on her.
Well, I'll remember that one. I'll look out for that scene when I watch it on DVD.
It's going to be hard to catch. Just going to tell you, it's going to be hard for you to spot.
Anyone out there listening, it's a good game for you. You can imagine which scene it might have occurred during.
That there was a fight between two women in the movie theater right behind me and Dan. And somebody spilled nachos on somebody else.
It reminds me of a story. A friend of mine went with her then-boyfriend to see, I think, The Hollow Man. and she really didn't enjoy it, so she was leaving the theater, and someone she didn't know, a stranger, saw her walking out and yelled to her, "Hey, where are you going? Movie's not over."
That's awesome.
Like, what do you Kevin care, Bacon. Buddy?
It was Kevin Bacon. Kevin Bacon in a mustache.
Someone so, like, I could see yelling that if I, you know, when I went to see The Prestige, if someone had walked out, because I really liked that movie a lot.
But, or like Schindler's really. List or something.
Well, it was a movie that, you know, had a message or something. Or something I particularly care deeply about. But I don't think anyone feels that way about like the Hollow Man.
Not one of the lesser.
Certainly not on first viewing.
It's one of the lesser Verhoevens.
Of the many lesser Verhoevens.
Like Flesh and Blood or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Although, hey, let's not say many lesser Verhoeven, because
yeah, it's a little rough.
Sorry. Okay,
he's got some great movies too.
But that's a story for another day.
Okay,
Dan, you look like you want to talk about something.
I may have a letter. Here.
I may have a letter
I
for you.
I may have a letter for all.
It's me, Dan McCoy. Ha ta 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 ta.
Ha ta 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 ta.
I almost got to meet your parents today, Dan, and I'm sorry I didn't, because I imagine they have very heavy Irish accents.
It's not true at
a
all.
A pleasure to meet ya, Elliot. I'm Mr. Master McCoy.
We may actually be Scottish, although I've never seen any evidence.
Pleasure to meet ye.
There you go.
Oh, that's good. I'm liking the room.
You're a friend of me son Daniels. Mm-hmm. And so forth.
Is Mike Myers in the room with us?
Or it very nice to meet a friend of my son Daniel McCoy.
Dana Carvey's here too.
Going off in a crazy direction there.
Oi! My boy Dan told me all about you.
Daniel okay. Craig!
Okay. Yes, Daniel?
I have a letter here. And it's from Fed, last name withheld. And it says, "Dear Floppers, I've been..."
Fred?
Yeah. Fed.
Oh, okay.
Fed, no R. "I've been following your podcast since the beginning, and I'm happy to report that it has become my favorite."
It wasn't your favorite to start
I don't like that at all. But
I guess when Elliot Kalin joined the crew, mm-hmm. that's when it reached the top.
It's when Faith House moved to bi-monthly.
That was the third kind of heat. But it says, "Every week I think of movies that I would like to suggest you see, but have refrained from doing so, mainly because I don't want to waste your time with films you would never accept being so far out of the range of what you consider flophouseable."
Thank you. Don't waste our time. I appreciate your restraint.
We're busy, very busy.
We don't have the time to read the title of a movie.
"Could you provide we the listeners with some guidelines for film genres, types, periods, or styles that you would consider worthy of watching and discussion? Or should we look at the list of already reviewed films and make our conclusions? Thanks." I like that he adds that option as if
we're too lazy.
Just look at what we did already. Draw your own fucking conclusions. Why don't you, jerk?
I am loath to codify our method of thinking, our modus operandi.
But there are some
There are some guidelines, yes. If you want to create your own flophouse, take an ordinary cardboard box.
I thought Dan already did this.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Dan, how would you describe the movies we watch? What are the guidelines?
Give us at least one guideline.
Yeah, and we'll take it from there. Like we always do, right, Stuart?
Yeah.
Number
Just
one.
Set up the jokes.
We'll knock it out of the park.
It should be a movie that...
Yeah, of course it should be a movie.
Hey!
And go!
Whoa.
Okay, keep going, Dan.
The exit stage left. It should be a film that is...
Oh, a film now, guys, putting on airs. No, the movie's not good enough for him.
That is relatively new to DVD or premium cable.
Sure.
It was in the theater not too long ago.
To give it some sort of air of relevance or currency. And, the older bad films have been picked to death by your Mystery Science Theater 3000s and sure. such. And, they've done a much better job at it than we could probably, so.
Because part of what this podcast is a service.
Yeah.
We're giving people advice, mainly not to rent these specific shitty movies because they're not very good.
Yeah, and if you enjoy yourself along the way, that's great.
Yeah, okay.
It's gravy.
But really, really, we're soaking in our own gravy.
Okay, so that's rule number one, got to be somewhat current.
Relatively recent.
Right. Not still in theaters, though, because sure. we actually don't make very much
We're
money.
Not going to speak for yourself.
Why don't you toss
one? We are not millionaires.
They shouldn't always be horror movies. Because I've been yelled at in the past for always.
No, that's not why. We just want to have a variety.
Oh,
but horror movies often work best.
Okay,
a certain kind of horror thriller.
That's true.
If you are contemplating suggesting a movie that stars Nicolas Cage as opposed to one that doesn't, recommend the one with Nicolas Cage in it.
That's a good
unless it's Honeymoon in Vegas.
But you bring up a good thing.
Well, because that doesn't fit the first rule now, does it?
Good point.
You bring up something good with the horror thing, though, in that horror films, thrillers, dramas, suspense.
Action. Adventure.
Usually much more...
thrill a minute.
There's more ground to till than with comedies, because a bad comedy is just unpleasant. Although we've done comedies, but
yeah,
there's
but they've been
a reason usually.
They're less fun for us to do. Yeah. And also it's like a suspense or a thriller or an action or a horror movie, you kind of know what you're expecting going in. So seeing how it fails to provide that or provide something different is kind of interesting.
Yeah,
sure.
Elliot, any thoughts?
I would say it should be – I mean, Fireproof doesn't quite fit this, but in theory – or maybe it does. It should be a fairly – high-profile film in some way.
Right.
Like, it should not be... We're not here to shit on people's dreams. Like, some guy scraped together $15,000 and made a movie, and it's terrible. That's no fun to make fun of.
Like the movie Memory, starring Billy Zane.
I didn't see that one. I wasn't in the group then. But okay. Last week we tried to watch Babylon AD. That kind of thing is perfect because it's a big-budget movie starring a movie star, and it got a big release, and it's total shit. Like, something that...
And what a star.
And what a star. Mr. Vincent Dieselowitz. something like, you know, Mirrors with Kiefer Sutherland or the Bratz movie because it's a big tie-in with a merchandising thing. Like something that was supposed to be a release of some note or they were hoping to get their money back, you know.
Right.
Not something where someone like staked his whole, you know, future on this and didn't know what was going to happen.
Well, something that at least you might have seen a poster for at a bus stop.
That's a good way to put it, yeah. Something you would have seen advertised near you.
I don't want to fucking see that movie, and then, you know, down the line somebody talks bad about it on a podcast.
I have begun to almost, like, salivate when I see posters for... Like, when I first saw the billboard for Swing Vote, I was like, oh, that we're going to watch that for Flophouse. It's going to be great. And it was okay.
I kind of feel that way about the current Angels and Demons posters.
I don't know. That one looks
going to be good.
It looks so boring.
Yeah,
it
is going to be really
boring. The idea that all of history, rather than being like this crazy confluence of events that happened almost at random with different people who all have their own motives, like butting heads and strange things happening, that instead of that, history is a puzzle game that you need to use to find a treasure.
Mixed.
Yeah, it's really...
Or Resident Evil,
as an amateur historian, it kind of takes a lot of the fun out of the existence of human civilization.
I had a guideline in my head, but I've totally lost it.
Oh.
I had two, voice. And I can only remember one. And the one that I can remember is, you know, someone on the Facebook page where you can
when you said page, I was like, oh, thank goodness, because I thought you were about to say on the Facebook, like an old man would.
You know, someone on the Facebook recommended, you know, tossed out an idea for a movie to do, and it was Black Sheep. And that movie is, you know, clearly, you know, tongue-in-cheek. It's campy, you know, it's about killer sheep.
I think I recommended it at one point for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, it's a movie that trades in, you know, certain,
it's
like...
It's jokey.
Yeah,
it's
not trying
supposed
to be bad to some degree.
There should be a certain amount of sincerity of purpose, is what you're saying.
Right. You can't make fun of something that's already taking the piss out of itself. So,
unless it does it very poorly.
Yeah.
But it's not worth it.
And because I can't think of the other one, maybe we should move on. Do you have any thoughts?
Let's go over that list again.
Oh, and you can't talk about Fight Club.
Yeah.
Okay. So
it's final rule.
It's gotta be somewhat current. It shouldn't be like a small budget thing. It should be something people know about.
Mm-hmm.
Big stars help.
If possible, you know, a nice variety of like topics, though comedies are best left alone.
And thriller, and you're pretty on pretty safe ground with horror thriller type things.
And wait, I think I lost track of what we were talking about.
See,
and no campiness.
No campy, yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Shrimp scampi, maybe.
Nice. So
Elliot likes things that rhyme.
There's like many people with mental disabilities. I enjoy for some reason rhyming words that are the meanings are not connected to each other.
Okay, so campy scampy. What's the next thing we do here?
We're recommending movies at this
point.
Okay,
that's cool.
We've exhausted our reservoirs of hate.
Is there any sort of prize for someone who recommends a movie and then we actually do it? Aside from our dulcet tones talking about the movie they recommended?
They can brag about bragging rights. I don't like. Okay. Someone did recommend Fireproof.
Okay, why?
That was something that came in via
why
email.
Because
they worried about our marriages.
I don't know.
Oh my god.
I can't answer that question.
Was it your wife that recommended it?
The person who recommended it could write in and say why they recommended.
Yeah, please do.
The email address again is theflophousepodcast@gmail.com.
I snuck that.
I gotta say, again about Fireproof, it was not good, but it didn't live up to the reputation of hilariously awful. If only because I don't find Kirk Cameron's religious faith immediately laughable.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Not immediately. It has to grow on you.
Yeah. It wasn't The Room, is what I'm saying. I don't know if you guys have seen that yet, but that's a hilariously bad movie. But one we wouldn't watch here because it's until it became famous for being bad, it was a tiny thing that a guy made, and it's not that relevant anymore. It's been out for a couple years.
Yeah. So, who wants? Okay, I'll get started.
Such a half-hearted offering to others.
Hey, so a movie that I saw recently that I do recommend is a little Spanish thriller called Time Crimes.
That rhymes.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I love it already.
You know, it's
Time Crimes with Lime.
It's a little low budget. It's a little low budget movie. It takes place in a relatively small area and over a short period of time, in a way. And it's just great because it's really tightly written, and it's cool. So
it's called Time Crimes.
Time Crimes. It's easy to remember because it rhymes.
Yeah, time rhymes.
Yeah, it's time rhymes.
You'll see that movie, Crime Time.
It's gotten a fair amount of good reviews, but I still recommend it. Put in your little net. Go over to your internet and go over to your queue for your Netflix and just drag, point and click, drag it
over. That's not how Netflix works.
Put it into the bin and then top of queue. Okay. And then hit refresh.
All right. So,
okay.
So you can look at it sitting there on the top of your queue.
Now log off. Log off.
Oh, then shut off the computer and hit it with a baseball bat as in Fireproof.
All right, so Stuart recommends Nightline. Stuart Koppel's Nightline.
Night
I thought it was called Fight Night.
Yep. Fright Night.
I do recommend Fright Night. If you're not going to watch Time Crimes, watch Fright Night.
You got it, Friday Night Lights. You got it.
I'd recommend that as well.
So
Sight Bite.
Excitebike?
Oh, Excitebike for the NES.
I recommend that too.
Price Right. You got it.
The best part about Excitebike is when you can make your own course and you just make a course of all the biggest ramps.
And it never works right.
And you're always like, hey dude, check out this awesome course I made. And it was always just like the biggest ramps. Like, it's so boring. like you're trying to make your bike go into outer space or something.
That's why. That's where that old saying comes from, which is "growing older is the process of learning how to make better excite bike courses."
Yep.
I think it's Robert Frost who said that.
Yeah, I want to recommend Trans-Siberian, starring Emily Mortimer and Woody Allen.
Woody Harrelson, you mean?
Yeah.
I mean, Woody Allen would be an interesting choice. This train is. We're in trouble, and there's a train, and we're. Ben Kingsley, why are you on it?
Trans-Siberian.
Kierkegaard once said that.
It reminds me of a joke about a train going through Siberia.
Max, we got to get through Siberia.
I'm glad, because initially your impression sounded a lot more like Snagglepuss.
Exit stage Trans-Siberian.
I'm glad he kind of saved it there. Why do you like this movie, Dan?
I like it because it's a. You know, it's a solid thriller. It's done by the guy who did Session 9 and The Machinist, which are both good movies, not great movies, in my opinion. But this movie has a lot of the style of those earlier movies, with a better script, stronger acting, and it's a movie that's well within like traditional thriller outlines, but when watching it, I never quite knew where it was headed next, so it was good at surprising you, which is what a good suspense film should do.
And there's Woody Harrelson's in it. Huh?
Woody Harrelson's in it, not Woody Allen.
Is he on a comeback?
Is he? I mean, the Trans-Siberian is probably not the right vehicle for him to make his comeback.
It gets in and out of theaters. Play, and then it disappeared from theaters almost immediately. So
is that? Can I go to my queue and just queue that one up? Is that an instant view?
It might be.
It is an instant view.
Oh man, heck!
You don't need to drag.
You guys can start watching that right now. Just put that into your instant queue.
Why are you listening to the Flophouse? You could be watching Trans-Siberian right now.
Well, go over to Xbox Live and go to Netflix Watch Instantly and hit play. Okay, cool. Now finish listening to this though.
That was slightly more accurate in the way that Netflix works. So once Elliot's done yawning,
I figured you would edit that out. I have
not this week.
Awkward.
Not this week. I'm headed off to Costa Rica.
Oh, yeah. Escaping
the CR.
Johnny Law's on his trail.
Mm-hmm. On the land from Johnny Law.
I thought it was because of the worldwide surfing championships are in Costa Rica. Yep. You need to save your car wash restaurant.
I'm appearing
with bikinis. Yeah.
I'm appearing in the film Surf's Up. Is that penguin surfing film?
Probably.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. That's me. I'm like one of those surfing penguins.
No, it's computer generated.
No, but I mean, is this a live action version, or are you going back in time?
It's people who surf with penguin costumes on.
Okay. Yes.
I'd be into that.
You can either dress up as a penguin or as Danny DeVito in Batman Returns.
What character did he play in that?
He played Oswald Cobblepot the penguin.
Wait, the Batman bad guy?
Yes.
So he wasn't Mr. Freeze or something?
No, that was Arnold Schwarzenegger in a different movie.
And the Joker wasn't in that one?
No, that was in the previous film.
Okay, he was the Penguin, are you sure?
Yes.
Okay, fine. I'll check it out.
Okay. I'm going to recommend two movies very quickly. The first is an Italian crime film called Gomorrah, which is about the Neapolitan crime organization.
That's delicious.
Yeah, it's a crime organization that's vanilla chocolate and strawberry.
Yeah.
They shouldn't taste good together, but they do.
It's about a couple different characters who are living in Naples. Each of them deals with, I think it's called the Camorra, the crime organization there, in different ways. It affects their lives. But it's not like, you're never dealing with the head of the family, or it's not like The Godfather where they kind of lead you through it and there's a romantic aspect to it. It's a very grim movie that is just about like, well, in the place these characters live, there's no way to avoid your life being touched by organized crime. It's somewhere in the background, but occasionally, they get killed because that's the way organized crime works. And it's just very like, it's almost like watching a war movie that's about people who are not on the front lines, but are just kind of living either behind the lines or in a town somewhere, maybe. And the war is right outside the town and occasionally affects them, but not always. It's just an interesting way to take a look at that without making it kind of like Godfather or Goodfellas, kind of like romantic. Ever since I was a kid, I wanted to be a gangster. A rise and fall of an epic tale of American whatever. You know, this is Naples. Just the way things happen. Organized crime is almost like a fact of like a natural force there, the way the movie puts it across. And the other movie is a new movie that's in a few theaters right now. The other movie is an old movie that I saw just this weekend called The Devil and Daniel Webster, which is like.
Is this the version that has Alec Baldwin and
Jennifer
Love Hewitt?
No, this is not the unreleased version with Alec Baldwin, Jennifer Love Hewitt, and Anthony Hopkins. This is the version from the early 40s, originally released under the title All That Money Can Buy, which is fucking stupid because The Devil and Daniel Webster is a great title. I don't know why you would change it. And plus, it was released at a time when ordinary people knew who Daniel Webster was, so it's doubly a good title. But about a man who sells his – in the early 1840s, sells his soul to the devil, played by Walter Huston. And when the time comes that the devil is going to take his soul and creepy shit is going on all over the place, he gets the great orator of American history, Daniel Webster, to come and defend him before a jury of the damned to get his soul back. And it's like funny at times and kind of very poetic at times in the way it's shot, but overall it's just like a really good classic fantasy story with some creepy horror elements and some genuinely kind of spooky scenes. And Walter Houston, who plays the devil, is fantastic. He's like the quietest devil in the world, this very like New England rural traveler devil, and he's just really good in it, and I highly recommend it. The score for it won an Oscar for best score for Bernard Herrmann, who of course would go on to do most of Hitchcock's American movies,
as
well as Citizen Kane.
That's so that's a safe bet.
Score-wise, when it comes to scores, that's a safe bet. But I watched it and this weekend I really liked it a lot, and so much that I yesterday went and ordered the DVD for it after I watched it on TV.
Oh wow!
That's what I'm going to want to revisit.
Hey, I thought of another good thing that movies should be.
Okay.
For the Flophouse.
Sure.
90 minutes long.
Yeah, that would be 90 minutes or less.
Yeah. Especially because Elliot really likes to get home and get to sleep because he has a demanding job.
It's not even get to sleep. I like to go home and see my girlfriend before I go to sleep.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like someone doesn't need a love dare.
No, I don't. Thank you. Yes, we have a very strong relationship.
And I need to go back to my house and pound a couple beers and then pass out.
Sounds like someone doesn't need a beer dare.
Pass out next to my three-legged dog.
I wish that was a metaphor for something, but it's not. He has a three-legged dog. Under the image of a kind of some sort of Arctic barbarian riding a sled pulled by polar bears.
Yes.
Hung in the window.
Yeah.
So I think that we've learned a lot tonight.
About Stuart.
And marriage.
About ourselves.
No shit.
So...
So do we need to say anything else, or just let it?
I think we should say goodbye.
Let's just enjoy the moment.
Just take a moment here.
Let's just trust our bodies.
Let's just do what our bodies want.
Yeah, absolutely.
Feel it.
Yeah. Let's just, you know, enjoy just it. Let go. So excited, just can't hide it.
And you, listener, you can enjoy us in your ears.
In your years?
That's what I thought you said, too. I was waiting for to come or years ahead or something.
Yeah.
Years ahead. You can think back in the times. You listened to Flophouse, your lost youth.
When you got fireproofed.
Back when podcasts are beamed directly into your brain unit.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Bunit.
Yeah, your Bunit.
Well, goodbye, everybody.
Yeah, exactly. I've been Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I will always be Elliot Kalin.
Good night.
I'll try to be funny. I haven't been drinking tonight, guys, so
hold on.
So maybe you'll remember what the movie's about. Oh, up top. Yeah.
Probably not, though.
Oh.
I have to play my Stuart character, who is absent-minded and loves naked ladies.
I listened to that probably 3 times. Just, wait, what? Come on, guys.
Wait a minute.
Wait, what? He's in the mirror world.
Come on.
Come on. Oh, that's so funny.